ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरं दस्य अग्नांजनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामहेयं करोति स्वपदन्तिकं मुखं करोति वाचलं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणम्। So, Arjuna has asked Krishna at the beginning of the 12th chapter, who is the best? The person who meditates on the impersonal feature of the Absolute, or he who worships the Lord in devotional service, bhakti yoga. And Krishna very clearly explains that the devotee is the best, as is mentioned in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yoginam Api Salvesham Mankitena Mantaratmana Swadavan Vajateyo Mam Same Yuktatamo Mataha. So Krishna confirms in the end of the 12th chapter, or in the end of the 6th chapters, the middle 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, that a person or a yogi who engages in bhakti yoga is very dear to him and is the preferred practitioner, if you like. So then Krishna explains the process or the gradual development of bhakti, and then after describing the direct process of bhakti yoga and the indirect process of cultivating knowledge, performing sacrifices free from fruitive motivation and generally an indirect process, Krishna explains the qualities of a devotee, what characteristics a person who follows the process of bhakti yoga, what characteristics they manifest and which are very pleasing to him, the qualities of a devotee. So in the last section of chapter 12, there's a list of qualities. Has anybody counted how many qualities there are? 35? Anybody counted them? Where did you read that?
In Surrender
Unto Me. 35, yeah. It said there that there's 35. I counted.
I didn't count them.
I counted them. I came up with 34. You know why I came up with 34? Because there's a repetition of one. But if you look closely at the different characteristics, then, and Prabhupada even mentions in one of the purports that there's repetition. And he mentions repetition of you know, good qualities, or repetition of spiritual information is not bad. But the sixth quality that's mentioned there is same dukkha sukha, which means equal in distress and happiness. And then, well, actually there is a difference. There is a difference between the two. Because one says sama dukkha sukha, right? Which means equal in distress and happiness. And then in 28 it says sama sukha dukkheshu. So there's a difference, because sukha comes first. But not much of a difference. Sama sukha dukkheshu. So there are many qualities or characteristics of a devotee that are mentioned in this chapter. 35. There's a list of 35 items, although I would suggest that 6 and 28 are basically the same. Sama dukkha sukha and sama sukha dukkha. Pretty, very, very similar. Now, let's have a look at some of these. The description of some of these. Actually, could somebody do me a favour and go up and get... There's a bottle of water on my desk, a blue bottle. Could you grab that for me? I think I sweated about a litre of water out. Rightio, let's have a look. So, Krishna has described the different stages of devotion. And now he's going to describe the qualities of a devotee that are automatically achieved by a devotee. This makes the process of devotional service very attractive. And in one sense, Krishna's underlining all of these qualities, consolidates his point of view that a bhakta is the best. Because all of these different qualities are accrued by a devotee automatically, basically, without extraneous endeavour. So, for one who follows the path of devotional service, then that devotee becomes... And Krishna says, these qualities are very dear to me. So he's underlining this point, or further consolidating this point, that a devotee is the highest. So the question of who is better, the personalist or the impersonalist, is settled. So then we have a description. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me, such a devotee of mine, is very dear to me. Prabhupada says, coming again to the point, a pure devotional service, the Lord is describing the transcendental qualifications of a pure devotee in these two verses. More than two verses, actually, for the next 8 verses, more or less. We should meditate on these qualifications and see how many of them we've actually managed to develop. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances. Anybody got that one sorted out?
Yeah.
Nor is he envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. He thinks, this person is acting as my enemy due to my own past misdeeds, so it's better to suffer than to process. protest. Huh? What do you think? I'll read you something really nice after I've read this quotation here. Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Bhagavatam, Tattenu Kampamsu Samikshamano Bunjana Evatma Kritam Vipakam. Whenever a devotee is in distress or has fallen into difficulty, he thinks that it is the Lord's mercy upon him. He thinks, thanks to my past misdeeds, I should suffer far, far greater than I am suffering now. So it is by the mercy of the Supreme Lord that I am not getting all the punishment I am due. I'm just getting a little by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is always calm, quiet and patient despite many distressful conditions. That's a real test. To be in distress and still remain quiet and calm and peaceful, accepting whatever happens as Krishna's arrangement. Now, there's a really nice explanation in the Bhagavatam purport to this verse. the words, I'm going into the into this purport. The word susamikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. Where does he say that? Where does Krishna say that a devotee is freed from his sinful reactions? Huh? Which, whereabouts in the 18th chapter? What's the verse? Huh? What is it? Moksha yishyami ma suchaha. I will liberate you. Right, basically, do not fear. Sava papibhyo, right? Mokshishyami masuchaha. I will free you from all sinful reactions. So how come devotees are still suffering sinful reactions? If Krishna promises to relieve the devotee of his reactions, then why is the devotee suffering? He would have suffered more, but he's still suffering. Whether he's suffering more or less, he's still suffering. It's not fair, is it? If Krishna says, I'll relieve you from all of your sinful reactions, do not fear, and then the devotee has to suffer, what's going on?
What's the opposite?
Hmm?
What's the opposite?
We surrender.
How far?
To the degree we surrender.
Prabhupada says it's not the fan. When you switch the fan off, it still spins for a while.
Still spins for a while. Okay. Here, I've got an explanation here in this purport. However, so Krishna says, and in part, yes, how much we surrender, it's got something to do with it. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the devotee who fully surrenders unto him. Ooh, I shouldn't touch that, should I? If it's recording. Just want to pick it up. Is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. So it looks like our sinful reactions, but it's not. That's why the devotee humbly accepts whatever Krishna gives him, because he understands actually it's not my karma as much as it is Krishna's mercy. Huh? This is Krishna's mercy on me. Because we generally don't look at that. We think, oh, he did this or she did that, or why me? I didn't do anything. The Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving, so we may still have a little bit of an enjoying spirit in the heart. Just a little bit, right?
A little bit? That'll be alright.
That'll be alright.
By sometimes giving his devotee punishments that resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord. And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. Right? Just in case we, you know, miss the point. He reminds us. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. Right? It technically is not. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly thinks to go back to the earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the words Dhoyabak, which means it's his inheritance. So, in order to purify us and make us pure so that we can actually enter into the spiritual realm, then we get those last vestiges of apparent reactions, but which are Krishna's mercy to purify us. So that's why a devotee has this very, very tolerant. A lot of these descriptions illustrate the tolerance of a devotee. Equipoised in happiness and distress, fame and infamy, hot and cold, doesn't see somebody as an enemy. There's a lot to do with tolerance in this description of the character of a devotee. And of course that's one of the characteristics as recommended by Lord Chaitanya in the Shikshastika. Right? Tororapi. Tororapi, which means what? Anybody know what that means? Like a tree. Like a tree. A tree stands out outside all day, got his hands up in the air, no clothes on. Cold weather, hot weather, no complaints. People come along, chop off his branches. Can't complain. Tolerates. So tree is a fantastic example of tolerance. And it's used by Lord Chaitanya in the, you know, basically if you want to make spiritual advancement, right? Somebody's phone. Trinadapi sunichina tarora pisuhishuna amanina manadina kirtaniya sadhari. So if you want to be able to enter into the divine realm of devotional service, then one has to be able to chant Hare Krishna. And in order to chant Hare Krishna, one has to be tolerant, humble, respectful to others, not proud, thinking everybody should worship me. Huh? So these qualifications they automatically manifest in the devotee. If they don't, Krishna then creates a situation where they do. Although we may not like it that much. But in order to be pure enough, in order to be, you know, the spiritual abode, the spiritual realm is an abode of purity, pure consciousness. And So if we have a tinge of still that mentality to enjoy the material existence, right, then Krishna has to create a situation so that we get free from that. We've already surrendered to the process of devotional service. So that's like putting your hand up and saying, I want to go into the spiritual world. Right? That's what we're doing. We're putting our hand up. Me, I want to come. But still there's that vestige of wanting to enjoy. So then Krishna mercifully makes the arrangements so that we are purified of that desire through these seemingly karmic reactions. But they're actually there to help develop these qualities. Now, there's some very interesting qualities in this first verse. And in the next verse too. Not envious of anyone, a friend of everybody, not a proprietor, that means he understands nothing belongs to me. What is it? Niramama. Here we go. Adveshta sarvabhutanam, not envious of anybody. Maitra means friend of everyone. Karuna, kind or merciful, right? Karuna. Niramama. What? Niramama means not mine, right? Not mine. What do you see when when you give it something, you try to take away? Mine. Or, you know, they're fighting. Mine. Let me just see if I've got enough to hand these around. Might be a little bit. I've got three. Might not be able. I made a bit of a map up today of the different qualities. Actually, I can. Nirahankaraha, without false ego. We'll come back to these later. Sama dukkha sukha, equal in distress and happiness. Tolerant. What's the word for tolerant? Where is it? Hang on, I'm just. Oh, always satisfied. Santushta. Satatam. Always satisfied, right?
27.
7? 27. Huh? Yeah, sort of. No, it's mentioned in the translation, but it's slightly different in some of the translations. So I took the word for word here. Santushta satatam. Always satisfied. Everybody here always satisfied? Yeah? That's 7:30 on the Thursday, yeah. What's the last? Okay, ready? I'm just going to exit this program here. It's getting in the way. Okay, good. Now, here we go. Yata Atma, self-controlled, Dridha Nishchaya Mayaprate, engaged in devotional service with determination. Mayi Arpita Mana Buddhi, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Now the next verse, I think that's the first verse. Then the next verse. text 15, because there's two verses there. Yeah, he for whom no one is put into difficulty. Nobody is put into difficulty for a devotee. And who is not disturbed by anyone. And he also is not disturbed. He doesn't disturb anyone. And he's not disturbed by anybody. That's pretty amazing. How can we say, if Arjuna was a pure devotee and he didn't disturb anybody, then how could he go and kill everybody on the battle of Kurukshetra? I missed the first part.
Destiny is predetermined, or
destiny is predetermined.
Oh, destiny is. That's not what I heard.
That's
I can't. Destiny is predetermined. But still, he was. The question is. That's true, but I don't think that's the answer to my question. No, it's not the statement is not wrong. But my point is. If a devotee doesn't disturb anybody, right, because Krishna says here, yasmat nodvijate, he doesn't disturb anybody, right? So if a pure devotee doesn't disturb anybody, how can Arjuna be a pure devotee killing everybody on the battlefield of Kurukshetra?
He was following Krishna's instructions.
How can he be following Krishna's instructions? He's killing people, and Krishna says here, that he does, a devotee doesn't disturb anyone.
Because it's not Arjuna killing them actually.
No. It's not Arjuna killing them. Well, what's going on? When Arjuna pulls the bow back and goes, ding, what's going on? If Arjuna's not doing anything.
Because
what was that? Govinda Kund? What was
that?
Yes, but that's still that again is not false, but I don't think it answers the question.
It's not
cutting
the soul, it's not even
the
body that's
killing. Okay, well, that's one way of looking at it, but you know, they would have got a bit of a shock. You know, they would have been, and here's a little bit of a clue, they would have been fighting to protect their lives with Arjuna. Right? So it could hardly be said that he wasn't disturbing them. Right? It could hardly be said that Arjuna wasn't disturbing people who were desperately fighting to save their lives. Right? So how is it that a pure devotee doesn't disturb anyone? And yet here he is, killing people who are fighting for their lives, trying to get out of his way so they don't get killed by him.
They're following their dharma, kshatriya.
Yeah, that's good.
Same as a book distributor.
Our book distributor is about killing people like Arjuna, right?
Yeah. But everybody's sitting there enjoying the propensity and material desires.
Killing material body, not the soul.
Maybe, but that's not that's as far as I can see. That's really got nothing to do with it. But I think Ursula's on the right track. They were prepared to fight with Arjuna. Right? They were a willing combatant. Right? So it wasn't he wasn't disturbing them. They were disturbing him in one sense. Or disturbing the status quo. That's why Krishna wanted them to fight. But generally speaking, a devotee is so mild-mannered. And this is one of the reasons why Arjuna didn't want to fight. Because Arjuna is actually a peaceful devotee. He doesn't want to fight because his nature is to not harm anybody. That's the nature of a devotee. But because there is a higher principle involved, and because, as you say, Krishna wanted him to fight, and also because they were belligerent, basically. Right? They wanted a ding-dong battle. But in fact, they were stealing, as Krishna, you know, Prabhupada points out, they were the aggressors. Right? They were the aggressors. Arjuna wasn't disturbed by their aggression. He was happy to go off and live in the forest and not want to fight them, because he felt it wasn't bad for them. But as you say, because Krishna said, fight, then he went in and fought. understanding that that was Krishna's.
What about Bhima Sen?
Bhima?
Yeah.
What about him?
He would sometimes get quite aggressive.
Yeah. He's the exception that proves the rule. He understood Krishna's desire. Well, I think, see, this is the point that Ursula was making. They're Kshatriyas, so this is their duty, actually, to fight. But anyway, I just thought I'd ask the question, because it occurred to me. If a devotee is supposed to not disturb anybody, then how come Arjuna's killing everybody? What else have we got here? He for whom no one is put into difficulty, loka nadvijyate chayaha, who is not disturbed by anyone, harsha marsha mukto, who is equipoised in happiness and distress. Right? Like, you know, today the Aussies won a gold medal. Carrying on. And somebody else lost. Whereas a devotee understands you win or you lose according to your karma. So no point in getting too fired up about the fact that you won, because that was what you deserve. And no point in getting too despondent about losing, because that's your karma, that's what you deserve. Bhavod Vegaya Mukto, who is equipoised in fear and anxiety. That's a good one. To be equipoised in fear and anxiety. That's a very hard one. Now, I think we're moving now on to the next one. Let's have a look here. Is very dear to me. Huh? Let's read the purport. A few of the devotee's qualifications are further being described. No one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. Since a devotee is kind to everyone, he does not act in such a way as to put others into anxiety. At the same time, if others try to put a devotee into anxiety, he is not disturbed. It is by the grace of the Lord that he is so practiced that he is not disturbed by any outward disturbance. Actually, because a devotee is always engrossed in Krishna consciousness and engaged in devotional service, such material circumstances cannot move him. Generally, a materialistic person becomes very happy when there is something for his sense gratification and his body. But when he sees that others have something for their sense gratification and he hasn't, he is sorry and envious. How come he got it? Why not me? Sometimes happens with the devotees. Why me? Why you? Why not me? How come you got Krishna's mercy and I didn't? Can happen. When he is expecting some retaliation from an enemy, he is in a state of fear. When he cannot successfully execute something, he becomes dejected. A devotee who is always transcendental to all these disturbances is very dear to Krishna. Next qualification. Anapeksha, neutral, not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. Suchi, pure. Prabhupada says in the purport that a devotee is accustomed to taking bath how many times a day?
Two times.
Yeah.
Plus.
He says two times, yeah.
I thought he said Priyas twice for brahmacharis, at least once.
In the purport, he says twice. Twice a day. He says he rises early in the morning. Right, and he bathes twice a day, and so Prabhupada says, and it's interesting, he says, by doing that one remains pure, right? Rising early in the morning and taking bath twice a day, one gets purified by that. Of course, if you're up early in the morning, then what are you going to do?
Go to the temple.
What else?
Chant.
Yeah. one will rise early and chant Hare Krishna or worship the deity, right? So it's, that's very purifying. Daksha. What was that? Whatever?
Expert.
Huh?
Expert.
Expert, yes. Daksha means expert. I think that's next verse, 16. Yeah, okay, next verse. Anapeksha suchir daksha. Free from care, udakshina. Is that right? Udasina. Gatavyatha, free from all distress. See, some of these are very, right, very similar, like gatavyataha, and over here, harsha marsha mukto, equipoised in happiness and distress. It's very similar, right? Very similar to free from distress. Sarva arambha parityagi, not striving for some result, but just doing his service, basically. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. Prabhupada, nice purports here. Money may be offered to a devotee, but he should not struggle to acquire it. Who's struggling for money at the moment? It says here that you shouldn't struggle. Okay, give it up. Relax. It's obviously not your karma. If automatically by the grace of the supreme money comes, he is not agitated. Here's where he says it. Naturally, a devotee takes a bath at least twice in a day and rises early in the morning for devotional service. Thus, he is naturally clean both inwardly and outwardly. A devotee is always expert because he fully knows the essence of all activities of life, and he is convinced of the authoritative scriptures. What's the essence of all activities? Huh?
To remember Krishna.
To remember. Oh yeah, good. Yeah. To remember Krishna and never forget him. That was last the other day that we were discussing that point. A devotee never takes the part of a particular party, therefore he is carefree. He is never pained because he is free from all designations. He knows that his body is a designation, so if there are some bodily pains, he is free. That's pretty good, huh? If there's a pain in the body, then we just ignore it. Huh? No, you're not the body. Because we want to be careful about this one, you know, because there are the brahmacharis who, you know, don't wear any socks and don't get themselves cold and then almost die of pneumonia. So there's a limit to some of these. There's a practical and intelligent application of some of these principles. Even though we're not the body, it doesn't mean we shouldn't look after it. The pure devotee does not endeavour for anything which is against the principles of devotional service. For example, constructing a big building requires great energy, and a devotee does not take to such business if it does not benefit him by advancing his devotional service. He may construct a temple for the Lord, and for that he may take all kinds of anxiety, but he does not construct a big house for his personal relations. Huh? One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. Nice purport. A pure devotee is neither happy nor distressed over material gain and loss, nor is he very much anxious to get a son or a disciple. What? Nor is he distressed by not getting them. If he loses anything which is very dear to him, he does not lament. So, and it keeps, that brings me back to the same, that example that I mentioned a couple of times, Prabhupada losing his Bhagavad Gita. Huh? So Krishna gives and Krishna takes away. He lost his Bhagavad Gita manuscript, which he must have spent many hours preparing. Yet he didn't lament. So in that case, transcendental in the face of all kinds of auspicious, inauspicious and sinful activities. Well, does that mean that we can do sinful activities and remain transcendental? Huh? Krishna says, here, you can do that.
It's the consciousness. If you're acting sinfully for Krishna, you can.
If you're acting sinfully for Krishna, it's
because
okay.
Because he wants that.
If you do it, maybe, if you do it unintentionally, then it could be forgiven.
Well, I think, you know, for the devotee, the inauspicious and auspicious and the sinful activities will be performed by others, not necessarily by him. Right? But he remains transcendental, equipoised. Right? That's not that he's performing sinful activities and remains equipoised. Others may be performing, but he remains equipoised and fixed in devotional service. So obviously not engaged in sinful activities. He's prepared to accept all kinds of risks for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is an impediment in the discharge of his devotional service. Such a devotee is very dear to Krishna. No impediments in his service whatsoever. So whatever happens, he takes it as Krishna's mercy. Even if there's setbacks, he accepts it as Krishna's arrangement. How's that for a devotee? One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honour and dishonour, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent. So it's nice, Prabhupada explains this point. He does not speak of anything but the topics about Krishna, therefore he is called silent. Then Prabhupada says, silent does not mean that one should not speak. Silent means that one should not speak nonsense. This is the definition of silence. Don't speak nonsense. There's that introduction to one of Krishna Prem's albums. I can't remember which one it is, and it's got the sort of like a rap music, and then it's got Prabhupada saying, don't waste time, don't talk nonsense. Right? Don't waste time, don't talk nonsense. Huh?
Become a devotee.
Become a devotee, yeah.
That might be in a different song.
I think it's in another one, yeah. Don't waste time, don't talk nonsense.
When you get time, chant Hare Krishna.
Huh?
When you get time, chant
Hare Krishna. When you get time, chant Hare Krishna. One should speak only of essentials, and the most essential speech for the devotee is to speak for the sake of the Supreme Lord. So, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residents. What's that? Niketa? Aniketa. Huh? Aniketa. I think that's what it is. What's it say on that map?
Aniketa.
Aniketa, yeah. Without residents. How would you go without a residence? Huh? Like that's the Goswamis. Every night the Goswamis would be sleeping under a different tree in Vrindavan. Huh? Every night sleep in a different flat in Albert Park. Because we understand that we're living in the house of Krishna. Everywhere is Krishna's house. Huh? The other residents of Albert Park might not like that idea very much. He may sometimes live underneath a tree. He may sometimes live in a very palatial building. He is attracted to neither. Yeah. Fixed in knowledge. And he was engaged in devotional service. Such a person is very dear to me. So, yeah, Prabhupada says, we may find some repetition in the descriptions of the qualifications of a devotee, but this is just to emphasize the fact that a devotee must acquire these qualifications. Without good qualifications, one cannot be a pure devotee. Harava bhaktasya kutod mahatguna. One who is not a devotee has no good qualification. One who wants to be recognized as a devotee should develop the good qualifications. Of course, he does not extraneously endeavour to acquire these qualifications, but engagement in Krishna consciousness and devotional service automatically helps him develop them. So what does that mean? It seems to be a contradiction. Prabhupada says you must have these qualifications and you should try to get them, but then he says, of course he doesn't endeavour for them. So So how do we reconcile that apparent contradiction?
It comes naturally, and if you try too hard, it might be like the opposite.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah, very good point. Yep, try too hard, or imitate even. It's easy to imitate some of the characteristics of a devotee. But it's very, very hard to maintain them if it's just a show. You'll be revealed in due course of time.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, you get sometimes in Vrindavan, you'll see people rolling around on the floor crying in the temple room. Now, Prabhupada wasn't very impressed by such behaviour. Because he said, you know, watch them and then I'll go outside and smoke a cigarette. Well, you see there's men walking around Vrindavan with peacock feathers in their hair dressed up like gopis. Slightly different, but anyway. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. So nice purport here, last purport. In this chapter, from verse 2, and Prabhupada explains, pretty much in this purport, Prabhupada explains the whole understanding of this chapter. From verse 2 through the end, the Supreme Lord has explained the processes of transcendental service for approaching Him. Such processes are very dear to the Lord, and He accepts a person engaged in them. The question of who is better, one who is engaged in the path of impersonal Brahman, or one who is engaged in the personal service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was raised by Arjuna. And the Lord replied to him so explicitly that there is no doubt that devotional service to the Personality of Godhead is the best of all processes of spiritual realization. Right. In this chapter, it is decided that through good association. Now, here's a really interesting statement by Prabhupada.
Can we
close
it?
So we'd have to listen to that. Look. Now, interesting what Prabhupada says here. In this chapter, it is decided that through good association, one develops attachment for pure devotional service and thereby accepts a bona fide spiritual master, and from him begins to hear and chant and observe the regulated principles of devotional service with faith, attachment and devotion, and thus becomes engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. Now, where in this chapter does Prabhupada say that one takes shelter of accepts a bona fide spiritual master and from him begins to hear and chant and observe the regulated principles? Where does Prabhupada say that? Or does Krishna say that? Tadvidhi Pranipatena in the fourth chapter, yes, but not in this one. Where does Krishna say this? Which verse? Which number? Because I can't recall him saying that exactly. Which verse? Which verse in this chapter? Okay, which section in this chapter does he say this? Okay, does he say this in... Okay, let's test. Who thinks that Krishna says this in this chapter? Raise your hands. One very hesitant finger just rising above the shoulder very slowly. Not sure. Okay. Who's not sure whether Krishna says this? Okay, radio. Prabhupada says here, in this chapter it is decided that through good association one develops attachment for pure devotional service and thereby accepts a bona fide spiritual master, and from him begins to hear and chant and observe the regulated principles of devotional service with faith, attachment and devotion, and thus becomes engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. Where? in spiritual circles, one has to substantiate their statements by quoting from Shastra. Okay, it's a test for you. Where does he say it? If he's okay, hands up, who thinks Krishna says it? Two people. Hands up those who think he doesn't say it. Two.
Maybe
means you don't know. Okay, who doesn't know? It's okay if you don't know. Okay, which verse does he say in? He says it in 12. Let me see. The verse after the description of the qualifications of a devotee who's fully absorbed in love and attachment for Krishna. Because he says, if you can't always think of me, then follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, right? So what are the rules and regulations of devotional service as described by Rupa Goswami? Shraddha, right? In the beginning one has some faith, one who has some faith in the process of devotional service, and if they'll come into the association of the devotees, then in the association of the devotees, they'll follow the hearing and chanting process, the rules and regulations of devotional service. One of those rules and regulations is taking shelter of a guru, right? So Krishna does say it. You're right, he says it indirectly, but he says, you know, for one who is fully absorbed in devotional service, that's the topmost devotee. Always thinks of Krishna in mood of love. But for one who can't do that, then he says, follow the rules and regulations of devotional service.
Does so, expert,
the
spiritual master, does say one should seek the guidance of an expert spiritual master.
In the purport?
Yeah.
Right, well, there you go, he does
12,
say it.
12.9.
Yeah.
The last verse
of 12.9. Yeah. Oh, I'm seeking in terms of what Krishna's saying. He doesn't specifically say that you do that, but that's the implication.
Yeah.
The implication of following the rules and regulations of devotional service is this is what you do. Good association, one develops attachment for pure devotional service, accepts a bona fide spiritual master, begins to hear and chant and observe the regulated principles of devotional service. Ado Shraddha Sadhu Sangota Bhajana Kriya. That's the beginning. Bhajana Kriya. Then Anatta Nivritti. Yeah. Removal of unwanted Nishta. Things. Nishta, steadiness. Ruchi, taste. Like that. Yeah. Ashakti. Comes next. Attachment. Okay, so this path is recommended in this chapter, therefore there is no doubt that devotional service is the only absolute path for self-realization, for the attainment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonal conception of the Supreme Absolute Truth, is, as described in this chapter, is recommended only up to the time one... Now here's the interesting thing. Prabhupada says that actually the impersonal conception has a place. He's actually saying here, The impersonal conception is better than no conception of God, right? A cultivation of a knowledge of one's spiritual identity is better than just thinking of the body, right? Of course, Prabhupada mentions earlier on in the purports that, you know, one can become too attached to that process, and then it becomes an obstacle for making advancement in spiritual life when one meets a devotee. But once one meets a devotee, then that conception is no longer beneficial or necessary, more or less. That's what he says here. In other words, as long as one doesn't have the chance to associate with a pure devotee, the impersonal conception may be beneficial. In the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, one works without fruitive result, meditates and cultivates knowledge to understand spirit and matter. which is recommended by Krishna, but that's the indirect process. The direct process is to be engaged in devotional service. This is necessary as long as one is not in the association of a pure devotee. Fortunately, if one develops directly a desire to engage in Krishna consciousness in pure devotional service, he does not need to undergo step-by-step improvements in spiritual realization. So we just need to engage in devotional service. And then automatically these other qualifications will come. Gradually they'll come. So we don't need to go and cultivate extra knowledge, perform other austerities, give in charity and all this sort of thing. Just by following the process of devotional service, all of these good qualities will manifest. Huh? I guess some of us are probably wondering, well, I wonder when it's going to happen to me. Stick at it. It takes time. Devotional service, as described in the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, is more congenial. One need not bother about materials to keep body and soul together, right? So you don't have to worry about mundane things. They'll automatically be kept together. By the grace of the Lord, everything is carried out automatically. Right? So we don't have to worry. Now, I've got some, for a little bit of an exercise this evening, I've got a listing of all of the qualities of a devotee. So what I'm going to do, what I want you to do is take one and then pass it on. Take one and then just pass it on. So I want you to have a look at that that quality and meditate on it for a little while. Perhaps look at its meaning in the in the text. Why don't you split it in half and pass some down this way, because it's going to take forever if we split it in half and send some back this side. Okay? I hope we have enough qualities to go around. So, haven't repeated that, haven't given a question yet. Okay, so what I want you to do is meditate on this quality, right? And then I want take it in turns to describe what your realization of that quality is, and to cite an example from scripture of somebody, or from personal experience, of somebody who demonstrates this quality. Okay? Who wants to go first? Okay, yep. What's your quality?
Daksha, expert.
Expert? Okay, what do you think that means? And who's your example?
The example is difficult, but I think we should be expert in the scriptures and in applying this in our devotional service and in all of this is necessary to be a good preacher.
A good preacher.
So when we are in I mean, in our common situation in our life, we meet different people, and basically they are coming to us because they have some kind of, they want to hear about Krishna.
Let's so speak louder.
Yeah, in our life we can meet a lot of people that needs to hear about Krishna. So you need to be an expert in explaining all about Krishna and how to become a devotee.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, expert, daksha.
It's much.
Okay, who's an example of that? Can you give us a concrete example?
I'm not so good in this part of it.
Well, yeah, Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, when, where, how, who, when, where, how.
Every moment, take your pick.
Yeah, we could say.
Well, that's what I'm asking you to do. Take your pick.
Expert.
In, when
he initiated them, then told them what to do afterwards.
Krishna, Prabhupada knew that how that he needs to follow his spiritual master order, and that's why he went to USA. And he knew that basically that Krishna will help him in this path, his path in America, and he just followed it. And when he came there, although he didn't have any material opulences to do it, he just had a few dollars, but he had the knowledge how to do it, and he applied this in his life. He sits in the park and started preaching to the people, showing the knowledge about Krishna, and they started following him because he was such an expert that they just knew that they can trust him.
Good. That's good. Yeah, that's a good example. Okay, one of the ladies. Who'd like to go first? Before I select you. Come on. Who wants to go first? Shall we start with A? A for Ayajarani. What's your quality?
He for whom no one is put into difficulty.
Okay, what does that mean?
Okay.
Who's an example of that?
Lord Ramchandra.
Lord Ramchandra? In what way? To go with him.
Situation, not into a troublesome circumstance.
Can anybody else think of an example of how a devotee doesn't put anybody in anxiety?
Megari the hunter.
Megari the hunter?
Yeah, when he became a devotee.
Yeah, what happened?
And he didn't want him. Oh, actually, Jad Bharata's a good one too. Jad Bharata's probably a better one.
Didn't want to step on any ants.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. I was actually thinking of
a couple, but just remind me when you
started describing. When Bharidas Thakur was being beaten in the 22 marketplaces, by the time they got to the 22nd marketplace, the two agents of the Qazi who were beating him were starting to get really anxious and crying because they thought, we can't kill this guy. And if we don't kill him, then we're dead because we're supposed to dispose of him and we can't. So they were getting in anxiety. And Haridas Thakur asked them, what's your problem? They said, well, we can't. If we can't get rid of you, then we're going to be killed by the Qazi. And so then Haridas Thakur, not wanting them to be in anxiety, he just went into Samadhi as if dead to relieve their anxiety. They were beating him, already beating him through 22 marketplaces. And he was concerned about their anxiety. So there's an example of one of those other qualifications. What other qualification is that an example of? Huh? Okay, Cody, what have you got? Your turn. Since you've been away for quite some time, now we're going to put you to work.
Some of the people in this test.
Say that again, loudly.
Samadukha Sukha, equal in distress and happiness.
Equal, what does that mean?
Is that
what's your understanding of that?
It's not deviation from devotion to Lord. Happiness and distress.
Okay, yeah. Here's an example. Queen Kunti. How is she an example?
Queen is so many different situations.
She actually prayed for the distresses to continue again and again. Because it helped her remember Krishna. Okay. Priti, what have you got?
Self-controlled.
Self-controlled. What's the word for that?
Yatha Atma.
What does that mean? What's your understanding of that quality?
Self-control just means that you, without engaging in activities for self-gratification, you need self-control. And just fulfilling the basic requirements, bodily requirements, and then engaging in the work of service.
Okay.
That requires your austerity and self-control.
Yeah, okay, good. Who's an example?
Very good example.
Okay, it's a good example, yeah.
You lived away from the Namaha and they bring them down, and it's like you said, living abroad and free every day and engaged in devotion service and for half a day.
Yeah.
It's like an absolute platform of transcendental devotion service and extreme kind of austerity, which is really impractical in today's world.
Yeah. But because of their depth of love basically for Krishna, they were able to almost be oblivious to what was going on around them in some circumstances, not eating and not sleeping and just being completely absorbed in devotional service.
Do you think if we can make
that step off like today? Why not? Why not? If they can't, that means then the process of devotional service doesn't work. Huh? So why not? Many may not do it because they haven't the qualification, but still on the path of perfection, they will eventually make progress. And even devotional service is a development over lifetime, so it might take some time, but yes, why not? Okay, what have we got there? Uddhava, what do you got? What's your quality?
Self-control.
Yona Rishyati Na Dveshi, one who neither rejoices nor grieves.
What's that mean?
That means someone who's not fazed by the losing a lot of money, or someone dies, or something like that. And I say, neither rejoices when something seemingly good happens, or grieves when something seemingly bad happens.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is a good example, but I was just thinking of the Pandavas came to mind when Yudhisthira gambled away everything and didn't grieve about it, and then obviously they won the battle. And I'm not really sure how they acted after they won the battle, but...
Oh, Yudhisthira was upset. He was upset because he felt that all of the people that died as a result of his desire for getting the kingdom. Who's a good example of that is Bhishma Dev, because they had to take him to Bhishma to have him preach to him. And Bhishma's lying on a bed of arrows, right? Completely shot full of arrows. And he wasn't the man, oh no, I've been shot through with all of these arrows, what am I going to do? Huh? But rather he preached to Yudhisthira that don't be disturbed by all of these things that have taken place. That actually it was Krishna's arrangement. And that very few people understand the real purpose of the Lord. Right, we were discussing this in the 11th chapter, right? In the 11th chapter, Arjuna was seeing in the universal form the outcome of the battle of Kurukshetra. So he was actually seeing the plan. He was actually seeing Krishna's plan. And we were discussing how Bhishma Dev told Yudhisthira that actually it is not easy to understand the plan of the Lord. Very, very difficult. Bewilders many people. So Yudhisthira, well, of course, he was probably displaying another side of a devotee in that pastime, right? But actually, Bhishma Dev is probably a better example of... What was it?
Yona Rishyati Nadveshti.
Oh, Rishyati means happy. And neither happy nor distressed, right?
This is one who neither rejoices nor grieves.
Yeah.
What about when you just hear all the brothers, they got... what was it? They went to drink out of the lake. And the personality.
The yaksha.
Yeah, told
him not to. Don't drink. I'm the controller of this lake. If you drink this water, you'll die.
So then they all died, and you just didn't grieve, and then he didn't rejoice when they came back.
Before you drink, you have to answer my questions.
And it was Yamaraj, wasn't it?
This is Father. Yeah. Oh, okay. Who else have we got here? Who wants to volunteer? Nobody. Why not? Christine, what's your qualification? What's your quality?
Forgiving.
What's your understanding of the meaning of forgiving?
Understanding and not being angry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Who's an example of a person who's forgiving? It's a classic example, not necessarily from the Vedic scriptures. Prabhupada quotes sometimes.
Nelson Mandela.
Maybe, I don't know. He's forgiving? Was he forgiving? I guess so. Yeah, he was pretty He was treated very badly by the apartheid, I guess you could say, basically, right? The
regime.
Yeah, the regime. Here's an example of forgiving you can think of.
King
Ambarish. Huh? Ambarish Maharaj. Yeah.
Jagai
Madai.
Oh, no,
now, you know who I was thinking of was Jesus Christ. When he was strung up on the cross, then he, you know, he prayed, you know, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. So it's a very poignant example. How are we going for time here? 9 o'clock. Okay, now I think Sunday is the last class we have for a couple of weeks, right? On our schedule. But what we're going to do is next Thursday, those devotees who haven't finished off their essays, they have to come to class. Right? Who hasn't finished their essays?
2, 3.
You done yours? Okay. Who hasn't done their essays? Okay. So next Thursday, I mean, if you want to finish off your essays before then you're welcome. Okay. If you haven't finished your essays, then at least next Thursday we'll be having a class just for those devotees to sit down and do their work. And then I think the next Sunday is Janmashtami, so we're not having a class. And then the next Thursday, I think, is also a break. I'll confirm that on my schedule. And that Thursday, for those who still haven't finished their essays, then we'll have another class until the essays are finished. Because I want to give everybody their new essay questions for the till the end of the year. So you have plenty of time. Is that okay? Yeah. All right. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.